Live from the Allstate Skyline Studio.
This is the Steve Cochran Show
on 720 WGN.
8:12 More on entertainment returns tomorrow. We got to talk about some stuff. Oh, who won? Who won the Hawks tickets? Ed and Displains just won the Hawks tickets. Of course, I was talking about who, Dave?
Minnie Minoso.
The great Minnie Minoso. In studio, Mayor Rahm Emanuel. Nice to see you as always.
How you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
You look good. I'm proud of you.
Thanks, man.
You know how close we are? I didn't even feel like I had to bring you vegetables. It's like I can come to the Cochran Palace.
It's like a whole new thing.
Without gift in hand.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah.
That's cool. All right, I got to ask you about State of the Union.
Do you?
When you
really?
I still have the taste in my mouth. Yeah. When, you know, you're hearing what you would expect here this morning. The Republicans all say it was great, generally speaking. The Democrats all say it sucked, generally speaking. This is a Hallmark card made-up holiday now, because there's nothing that comes out of the State of the Union that isn't more than 24 hours of headlines. Whatever the president promises almost never gets done. So what is the point?
Oh, no, it's important.
Why?
One, the Constitution orders it.
I get that part.
Okay, so that
I could send a letter.
If we're still a country of laws, you got to kind of follow
that.
Could
send a letter.
Okay, yeah, you could.
Yeah.
But Wilson, President Wilson, changed that about a little over 100 years ago. Everybody used to send it up by written form. I think it's the right thing to do, because I do think a president should set the course and explain to the country where we are, where we think we should go. And I actually do think that's the responsible. Having worked on 8 individual ones of them, I actually think two things. One, this was not one speech, it was two speeches. One calling for bipartisanship, and the other one rattling the base. So it was actually a kind of a bifurcated speech.
Okay, so I know you can't get inside whatever the Trump organization is, but when you put this together, when you helped craft this for Clinton and for Obama,
here's where I think
how much work goes into it.
Oh, well, they're both different. I'll tell you a funny anecdote. President Clinton used to practice. I would say, if I said 20, it could be 20. It could be 18, but it was never less than 10 times minimum. I mean, he would practice and keep rewriting it in the auditorium.
Really?
Movie theater at the over in the East.
Run it like it was real.
The first time we were doing this, the President Obama did a run through and said, "Okay, I'm ready." I said, "Whoa, what do you mean?" I mean, I cleared like 3 days before. I said, "What do you mean?" I was trained with President.
Right, right.
I just talked to you yesterday about some stuff, and it was just unbelievable. But I'm done. Now, here's what I actually think. So, one, let's do a set. The only time you've had two presidents with as low a job approval going into a divided government speech. One was Ronald Reagan dealing with a recession after 82. He was in the 30s. Recession. The other time in would be 07, right after 06, when we took back the House.
Mm-hmm.
George Bush, because of the Iraq War.
Mm-hmm.
The truth is, with this economy and everything, Trump should be in the 50s. That's where Clinton would be, Obama would be, and President Bush, 43, would be. And it tells you something. And what I would have done in this speech, where I think he missed it, is, one, it's pretty clear he's close to getting an agreement on Afghanistan. I would have set that up, because that is going to be a big deal, ending the longest war in American history. Two, I would have set up the China trade negotiations and what it meant, because if you get it, and only he would know, you would actually elevate the expectation of how significant, because the economy is the biggest thing he has going into 2020.
He'd also blow the market up today.
So I actually think spending, I didn't do the timing, but let's just say 20% of your time on one topic, immigration, miss that in the next, there's three things in the next, let's call it 6 months, that could flip his presidency out of the doldrums. Pulling out of Afghanistan, which is not a popular war at this point. Getting an agreement on China that can set the economy. And three, an argument about why we will save democracy in this hemisphere and Venezuela. And those three things, if he had actually spent any time on them, the speech would have actually prepared the ground so when those things do happen, at least you can look at it today, two out of three look likely. He would have actually taken himself out of 38-39% job approval in a quote-unquote good economy and elevated himself to 46%, and I think that would have been, and I just look at this as a drive-by missed opportunity.
Well, also politically,
nobody strategically planning in that White House outside of him.
What you just said politically would put the pressure on Democrats then to respond to the fact that he gave you an optimistic 3-point agenda. Now what are you going to do to work with him? And he didn't do any of it.
And the truth is, he could have also put the Congress basically as just a bunch of babies arguing and fighting and constantly acting. And I think he in sense of planning, really missed an opportunity and guaranteed You got trade talks that have to happen with China, and they're happening. And you're going to probably get an agreement because both the leaders need it because they're both weak.
Do you think shutdown was in there and they took it out?
No. No, because basically he wants to put that as quickly as he can in the rearview mirror and drive 70 miles an hour from that moment.
But you wouldn't go on and say, I understand the struggles that government workers went through?
I think he keeps doubling down on a losing hand. This is like the guy at the poker table.
Making up for the losses?
Yes, and he's doubling down trying to get out all the time with a bigger hand, and he keeps losing. I would not have done what he did in immigration because the truth is you want to flip it. And if you have what looks like an agreement with Taliban to end the longest war, a 17-year war in American history, you would have actually created a big win. And Americans like one thing for their president, to win.
Yeah.
Incredible
waste of Afghanistan
winning,
and everything.
You got three wins, definitely two coming.
You don't think he can win on the wall?
No. I actually, if I thought so, you would have had it already.
Yeah, but he made a pretty compelling argument last night.
You don't need me to...
To set up maybe a national emergency. I mean, he seemed to be setting up
the Republican parties, the Republican members of the House and Senate are going to walk from him on that. He's between a rock and a hard place.
Well, there is no national emergency. It is just complete nonsense. If there was a national emergency, the news that he likes to use and then call fake news, we would see pictures constantly of people climbing the wall and invading and kidnapping and pillaging.
Idiotic. Here's what he should have done. If you want, quote unquote, the barrier, what you say is, look, this is part of a larger strategy. Here's what I'm going to do. And he should have enlarged the discussion of immigration. What he did was shrink it down to one thing, and again, he missed it. I just think, and I'm sorry, this is a White House absent strategic thinking.
So should the Democrats seize on the ad-lib in the speech? He had one line in there where he said, I want the largest numbers ever of legal immigration, which is different than what his administration has done in the last 2 years.
Should they
seize on that and say, yeah, well, then let's see it?
No, but the problem is you don't have a White House. Look, he had an agreement on a budget. He watched Fox TV, which he seems to do every day for like 8 hours a day, and decided to walk away from an agreement. He created this problem. McConnell's like, okay, and he's spending countless hours trying to figure out. I'm sorry. This is not that problem. You act like there's real thinking going on. You have a bad case of the for reals going on. Okay? There's no thinking going on.
Never.
You have an emotive president who didn't like what Jim Mattis said, so he fires him. And now everybody's trying to cover up for one of the worst strategic calls on Syria.
Well, and there's
he just made another mistake on Iran and Iraq. Give me a break. You act like there's really something going on where they sit together and strategically plan. This is a person, depending literally not how he wakes up and what side of the bed he gets on, how he falls out of the chair when he's watching TV.
And there is a win right there for both sides, because the win is we can work it, because the border is a problem. The border's been a problem for a generation. Fix it for real. Fix immigration for real.
Look, President Clinton used to say, which is, we're a nation of laws and a nation of immigrants. And anything you do has to respect both of those.
Right.
Yeah. And that's where you're going to weave. But you know, the problem is, and this is not Trump's, although he's making it worse, there is big support in the middle, but the sound is on the extremes. And leadership now is trying to find and weave a place that everybody can get enough to declare victory.
The middle's got to make more noise.
Well, here's the problem. You know, it's interesting. This is part of one of the chapters I'm going to write on my book is, don't ever confuse in politics sound with fury.
Mm-hmm.
And the truth is, people on the extremes make a lot of sound. There's not a lot of sound coming out of, quote-unquote, the middle.
Mm-hmm.
But don't ever confuse the loudness of the sound with the fury of where there's following.
And forget about the middle, and you're never going to get anything
they're
done.
They're just ideological, but people want to see progress.
Of course.
And, sometimes you do it four or five steps. Sometimes you do it a step at a time. But it's just, there's no, there's no great, great call out of the middle, quote unquote, for let's do this. They want to see it, but they don't advocate with the same energy that the extremes do.
We got good news on schools I want to get to, but first, are you going to need help with Cubs tickets this summer?
No.
I couldn't help but notice. I couldn't help but notice you were quite upset with Mr. Ricketts.
I want to be clear, because if my brothers do something that they're responsible, Joe Ricketts' comments do not belong in the city. And the one thing I know, Tom Ricketts and I know Lauren, I'll say complimentary, it's clear that their mother had more influence on their child rearing than Joe Ricketts. And what he said is abhorrent to everything I believe and everything this city believes. It's racist. And he owes everybody an apology. And it doesn't belong here. And I've spent very little time in Nebraska. My guess, it doesn't really belong in Nebraska.
No, either. I would agree.
But here's the deal. Don't bring any of that to this city. You want to say it in Omaha? Go ahead. But don't bring it here. And if you say it in Omaha, we're probably going to still scream at you because it doesn't belong anywhere in America.
Dave, anything from the Ricketts family in the past couple of days?
Well, Tom Ricketts had issued a statement saying
but not that Joe.
To distance himself. Joe Ricketts made a statement with an apology.
Here's the thing. He once, in this email with his son, said, not Tom, that I didn't share his values. Never are there truer words. I don't share those values.
Mm-hmm.
And guess what? Nor does the city of Chicago share that values. Now, my mother ran Congress on racial equality, was helping organize it, did the integration of Chicago, beaches and housing in Chicago.
The CORE program.
Yeah, what's that?
The CORE program?
Yeah, CORE. I will just say this. I think Joe Ricketts needs about 2 hours of my mother. A good Jewish mother would set him right.
Your
mother's gotten a little old. It may be 2.5 hours, but I think after what she's done with three boys,
Do you separate Joe Ricketts from the rest of from Tom and Laura and the Cubs, the Chicago Cubs?
I'm not saying I know. You can never read a book by its cover, but I spent a lot of time with Tom Ricketts negotiating so he could invest in Wrigley Field. And be a good neighbor to Wrigleyville. I spent some time with Laura and her partner. I will just say those, I've never heard nor have I seen any intimation that those are their values. Joe Ricketts is not only Joe Ricketts, and all I can indicate is that Mrs. Ricketts had a greater influence on their child rearing and their values than Joe Ricketts. This guy assumes because he's rich, he has the character to speak on anything.
He did this crap on
President Obama and the birther, which is when I took him on. And I'll just say this. This stuff does not belong. It is ugly. It is stereotypes. Home here.
Yeah, yeah.
The only way hate survives is with silence. And I'm not going to let... And I don't believe people in Chicago...
Wasn't Alan Simpson at McCain's funeral, right? Didn't Alan Simpson say hate corrodes the vehicle it's contained in?
Well, I mean, look, the great... Whether you say it about Mexicans or whether you say it about Muslims,
mm-hmm.
there are people of good faith and good character that both are Muslim and Mexicans that have come and built this great country and this great city. And I would just say that, breaking news, Rahm Israel Emanuel is Jewish.
What?
But yeah, I know. Sit down, Steve. Don't faint. But every year we have a Ramadan dinner. Amy and I host it.
Yeah, I'm more of it.
With religious leaders, Muslim religious leaders, and people from whether it's Pakistan to the other countries of the Mideast. Because whether it's Jewish or Muslim, there's a share and belief in God and the values of unity. To say that Muslims is not a serious religion and not one of love is to be totally ignorant of the words.
I completely agree.
And the faith and the spirit of the Muslim faith.
I completely agree.
And if I can find a way to reach out. So my view is Joe Ricketts needs a 12-step program by Marsha Emanuel, and she'll get him right. I have absolute confidence in her.
I'm afraid of your mom now just based on that description.
You know what I used to say to my mom? You love Ezekiel more than you love me. She goes, no, I hate you all equally.
Headlines coming up.
You got to know about my mother.
We got to get this new school news in, yeah. Too, and I got a couple other things to bring up, too.
This is 720 WGN Chicago.
Mayor Rahm Emanuel's here. The Chicago Public Schools are announcing a new summer reading initiative. This has been a big deal. In 3 months, this is not going to be something that you're going to be able to shepherd the way you have in the past. I think it's important that you talk about it before you leave.
So
the summer reading program.
When I first got elected, we set up what I call the summer of learning because it deals with the summer slide where kids slide back 3-4 months
right.
in the summer academically. So when they start the school year, they're back in April, basically. So at the library, which we have over 100,000 kids participate in, called ROMS Readers. Mm-hmm. They read books and stay engaged. All the museums, Shedd, Adler, participate. So we make it a big campus, the city. And twice the library's been, Chicago Public Library has been awarded by the Summer Learning Association as the best summer learning program in the United States. 20 cities now replicate Chicago.
I think one of our Kid of the Weeks was one of Rahm's readers.
Yeah, that's true.
The bow tie ring kid.
So one of the things that's happened over the years when we lengthen the school day and year is the amount of kids that have to go to summer school for catch-up started to shrink. It's almost cut in half, like 40% reduction. So Janice and I were talking in our weekly meeting, and so one day, Janice Jackson, we came up with the idea, rather than summer school being about catching up, it'd be about getting ahead. And the Lefkowski family and another family helped us. And so at 50 schools, we're going to pilot. The third grade teacher at the end of the year will give the second graders, here are your four books, read them in the summer. So when you start school, you know these books. Fourth to third, fifth grade teacher to the fourth grade incoming. We're going to fund all the books. Nobody has to worry about the books. We're going to fund all the books, etc. And then summer reading will not be, or summer school or summer learning will not be about catching up because you're during the year you fell behind, but about actually getting ahead. So when you start in September, you don't have to hit the reset button. And the simple, and I think we have these 50 schools based on Dr. Jackson and others. We'll do it this summer, and I have all the confidence that you'll see success. And then we have the charitable and philanthropic community ready to take it to all, you know, 300-plus elementary schools across the city. Janice and LaTanya McDade, the two top folks at CPS, are picking the schools. We're going to road test this summer, get the bugs out of it, but then going to go and take it citywide, assuming that it meets the academic, which I can't imagine. How could reading books during the summer not work? Although, Steve, you're living proof you don't have to read during the summer to make progress.
Well, if you want to get into show business.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm an exception.
That's it. Those are standards.
Yeah.
Anybody can clear?
Anybody. Listen, if you can't find legitimate work, do
you
this.
You read that advertisement from
Walter E. Smith.
Walter E. Smith. Unbelievably.
Well, What can I tell you? With eloquence, like Shakespearean English. What can I tell you?
Yeah.
Everybody that wants your job has come through here, with the exception of Neil Sales Griffin, who's in on Friday.
Yeah, he's coming in soon.
Strangely enough, they all think you're a dramatic failure.
And so does Amy.
Yeah.
Tell them to get in line. There's 14 people universally think that now.
I have asked each and every one of them, aside from bashing each other, what do you do to continue the good that's going on in this city?
Uh-huh.
How do you keep the cranes above the skyline? How do you keep the good rolling? And I've gotten very weak answers from everybody. That scares me as much as anything, that you don't look at a job as big as the mayor of Chicago without a vision of how to keep the positives rolling.
Here, two things let me say. One on the economy. If you want to make investments, you got to grow the economy, not redistribute what you have. And one, that's what we started off, and today we have the lowest unemployment in the history of the city and the highest employment since 1950. And we've been growing the economy, but then also we've been added 8,000 kids to full-day mentoring. We're doing universal full-day pre-K. We have doubled the size of summer jobs. To get those resources, you need to grow the economy.
Well, how do you monetize the success if you don't talk about it, if you don't have a plan for it?
The second thing is, you know, Sean Reardon at Stanford University said that everybody has to watch Chicago Public Schools because they're outperforming on reading and math and gains across every sector, not just some parts of the city. And our graduation rate is double the national average over, you know, growth-wise. We went from 56 to 78.5. We're on way to track 80%. This year, 50% of the high school graduates already have college credit under their belt. And so we're making real progress, and you got to have the ability sometimes to tell people no. You got to have a vision, and then with that vision, you got to have the mettle to see it through, because there's a lot of political forces that don't want to see, as I used to say to President Obama, people hate the status quo, and they're not too excited by change either. Yeah, they kind of got you right where they want you.
On Monday, you are going to come over. We're going to record a podcast.
Oh, we are?
And we'll be putting it up next week. And we'll have a longer conversation about all these things. But as always, I appreciate you coming over.
Thank you. The one other thing, I just wrote a piece in The Atlantic about what I learned that the reformers don't get about education. Things like, it's not about the teacher. It's about the principal as well.
Okay. Is it up now? Going up today?
Yeah. Number two, stop the fight about charters versus neighborhood. It's about quality versus mediocrity. It's not about brand. Number three, high school is not about graduation. It's about preparing for what's next in education, because high school doesn't cut it anymore. And number four, since 80% of our children's time is outside the classroom, don't focus only on the 20%. Invest in after school. Invest in summer jobs. Invest in mentoring programs. Invest in all the ROMS readers and reading in the summer. Everything outside the classroom can help you see progress inside the classroom. And none of the big literature and the big fights over the last 20 years. It's always about teacher this, teacher that. Never about the school principal, and they're the driver.
You got to think differently.
Yeah, well, it's things you learn. And I'm, you know, I'm proud, most proud of where we've made progress in the schools. When 30 years ago, William Bennett called us the worst. And today, everybody's saying you got to look at Chicago because that's how you see progress. And we're not done, but we're heading in the right direction.
It's going to be a very busy last couple of months for you. By the way, say hi to your lovely wife and your family, and please say hi to your mom because I'm afraid of her now.
No, well, actually, I think, Steve, you will only need 45 minutes with her. Joe Ricketts, 2.5 hours.
I would just meet your mom and go, whatever you need. Whatever you need.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no negotiation there.
You know, we are all... I refer to my marriage, I'm Neville Chamberlain. Peace in our time.
Right. Nice to see you. Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
And I'll talk to you on Monday.